The following is a 17-minute recording of Martin Doyle speaking at the September 23, 2015 meeting of the Water Protection Network, Washington, D.C. Doyle is professor and director for Water Policy Program, Nicholas Institute for Environmental Policy Solutions. The recording is 17 minutes long.
All right. Thanks very much. In 1927, the Corps of Engineers recognized the fact that levees wouldn't solve all the problems, and so what they did was they started to embrace reservoirs and flood control reservoirs as one of the ways that they were going to deal with floods. And what I'm going to talk about today is the use of flood control reservoirs, and especially reallocation and reauthorization of flood control reservoirs around the U.S. It's a big project. The big thing that we tried to do with this project is have myself, who is a somewhat useful hydrologist, but also a couple people who actually do water law. And I brought in a person who does environmental data analytics, which has really opened up a lot of opportunities. I'm going to talk a lot about some studies that we've had come out. I'll have these citations at the end of my talk as well, and I can probably get them to you sometime today. So briefly, we're going to talk about why we're even talking about reservoir reallocation, the development of this database that we're putting together at Duke. And we talk about adaptation, adaptive management, the Corps of Engineers and other federal agencies. We want to talk about how that's different from flexibility, and what we see now is flexibility rather than adaptation. The resource is storage area for reservoirs. The dam itself is not a resource. The actual resource is the empty space behind a reservoir. So how we manage that empty space is actually how we manage this enormous resource around the U.S. While the vast majority of dams in the United States are not federal dams, the slightly about 56-57% of the storage capacity behind reservoirs in the United States is federal, behind federal dams. So if we want to talk about how we're going to use reservoir storage capacity, it's the federal reservoirs that actually matter. Now, most of this reservoir storage capacity came on or was authorized, congressionally authorized, designed and appropriated in the operations manuals put together between the years of 1936 and 1978. So that window of time between about 1940 and 1970 is when the science was done that ends up being kind of physically manifested in the reservoirs that we see around the U.S., as well as manifested in the actual manuals that are used to operate those reservoirs. So that time window, climatologically, demographically, and economically, is critically important to understand when we fast forward to 50 years, 40 to 50 years later. This is the way we think about reservoirs and the storage capacity behind reservoirs. This is a schematic that the Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Rec, and other federal agencies like to have. The idea is if you imagine this room as a volume, that's an empty volume behind a dam that's not storing any water, they divide that storage capacity into pools where the pools represent the multi-purposes that dam has to fulfill. So the bottom foot of this room might be set aside to eventually fill up with sediment. The next 5 feet would be for multi-purpose, things like water supply, water quality flows for downstream, hydropower. And then for flood control reservoirs, the top 5 feet of this room would try to be left empty. And that's for when these floods come in, essentially the room fills with water, and we gradually release that water to downstream. So there's a balancing act that we have to have where we want to keep the water as close to the top of what's called the guide curve or the operational target, so about 5 feet deep in this room. And we don't want to get it too low because that's our water supply, but we don't want to allow it to go too high in case there's a flood that comes through. So we have this balancing act that we have to do in that. Now, all of the rules, so in 1945 and 1952, the rules that were in place, the expectations and the authorization, the expectations of the reservoirs, are all embodied in the operational rules that go behind this reservoir. So if we were prioritizing flood control, the elevation, the amount of volume that we set aside for flood control in this reservoir is going to reflect the fact that that was an economic priority at the time when Congress authorized this particular dam. Same thing as if we prioritize hydropower, we would see that in the operation manual as well. Now the problem is, we're not in the 1950s anymore, we're not in the 1960s, and the conditions have changed around these reservoirs. And so some of the things that have changed are climate, the amount of sedimentation that we have, water demand and population has changed dramatically in places that were not expected to change in the 1940s and 50s, and also we have environmental regulations and public policy regulations that we didn't have 50 years ago as well. So a couple of examples. We've done a series of studies on ResSed, the Reservoir Sedimentation Database, that the federal government maintains. It's spotty, but interesting. So as an example, these graphs are a little bit tweaky. They don't quite show the same thing. The one on the left is the Redmond Reservoir in Kansas. The dotted line going across there is how long they expected the conservation pool to actually exist. So they're expecting very low rates of sedimentation. Instead, what they got was very fast rates of sedimentation. So instead of the dam, the sediment pool being available up until the year about 2050, instead the sediment pool officially filled this year, 2015. So the sedimentation rate for Redmond Reservoir was much faster than was expected. Conversely, Falls Lake in North Carolina, with the main water supply for Raleigh and Durham, North Carolina, the reservoir sedimentation rate was projected to fill up at about the year 2080, and instead it's projected to fill in about the year 2200. So the sedimentation, turns out people don't smoke as much, or at least we don't grow as much tobacco in North Carolina. So the change of this very broad economic trend means that there's a lot less tobacco growing in North Carolina. We grow a lot more pine plantations now, which means we get a lot more sediment. We get a lot less sediment while leaving our field. So we have a lot more storage capacity in the reservoirs that we may be able to take advantage of. The other thing is climate, and we talk a lot about this under the auspices of anthropogenic climate change, but the reality is there's natural climate oscillations that occur. The Pacific Decadal Oscillation, or El Nino, is one that we generally think of. In the eastern United States, we're heavily affected by what's called the North Atlantic Oscillation, which has a 70-year oscillation pattern. It turns out that the peak of the NAO oscillation, the peak of the wet period, was between 1960 and 1970. So I'm showing temperature data here. The same thing holds for precipitation and stream flows from a variety of different weather stations. This is the entire time period from 1934 to 2005. If we look at 1934 to 1969, during that particular phase of the NAO, we see that it was an anomalously wet period. So during the time window when Congress was authorizing flood control dams, we were in the peak of a wet period of a climatological cycle. After the year 1970, we've entered into a dry phase. And so what we're seeing now is these dams that were authorized under one climate scenario are now being used in a very different climate scenario. So even without humans affecting carbon dioxide emissions, we're going to get these climate variations that have important implications for how we think these reservoirs will actually operate. So to bore in on one case in particular, this is Jordan Lake, which supplies the water for southern part of Raleigh, Cary, North Carolina. The red line is the amount, the mean annual flow that was expected to come into the reservoir for water supply purposes. So if we needed to fill this reservoir up, or this room up to 5 feet, we're gonna do that assuming a certain flow is coming in each year. That's the red line. The blue dots and the blue lines, this is the actual mean annual flow over the period of the past 40 years or so. And what we see is about 57.5% of the time, the mean annual flow is less than what it was expected to be. And the big problem is, if you look at these years in the last 10 or 15 years, the typical condition is about 70 to 80% of the mean annual flow. So we have less water coming to this reservoir than was expected when the reservoir was authorized, designed, and the operations manuals actually set up. So what we started to do at Duke was to think about, is this unusual? How might we start looking at this systematically over the entire United States, both for the Corps of Engineers as well as for other federal agencies? And what we started with was the fact that the Corps of Engineers and other federal agencies have what are called operational targets, which they also call the guide curve. So this is an actual elevation that these reservoirs are targeted to be held at. In addition to that, they also maintain a database of the actual water surface elevation. So we actually have, here's what they expected it to be, here's what it actually is, and we have that for all of these different reservoirs. And so we just wanted to look at, are the reservoirs consistently over under? Are they getting worse? Is there variation throughout the US? What's actually going on? So similar to what Nick was talking about, we prioritize, we use a lot of modeling, but we always want to go back to the original data because that's in the engineers what resonates with people and even with engineers. Okay. I'm an engineer. The database turned out to be a lot harder to put together than we were expecting. There's not a centralized database at the Corps of Engineers for reservoir operations data. There's not an operational strategy for the entire US. Each division operates very differently. Each district operates very differently. Divisions tend to have a way that they collect data, but the districts may or may not collect the data in the way that the division actually sets things up. So a lot of these data were in hard copy form or in spreadsheets that were diffused around the district agency. So what we did was we hired an army of master's students who have spent the past year downloading data or scanning data, transcribing the data, and then we're filtering that data right now. And so what I want to show you is, hopefully, some of that. All right, so what we have in the database, this is roughly what it looks like. It will eventually be web accessible to everybody. It's not right now. We're still trying to make sure that the data is clean and good. So what I have here is the Corps of Engineer Divisions label. You can filter by the different dam types. I'm going to look at the South Atlantic Division, which is where I am, the Wilmington District, and then show you a couple of examples. So this is the Jordan Reservoir. And what we have is around the elevation, this is the guide curve. And so is the water above the guide curve or below the guide curve? So when it's black and blue, that means that it's above the guide curve. And when it goes red, that means that it's below the guide curve. So essentially the water is in deficit. So this gives us a sense of over the past 30 to 40 years, how often has the water been above or below? Now the more interesting thing to me are these curves on the bottom. And what these are is each day of the year, we have about 30 years of data. And so what we did was we said, and I apologize to this side of the room, but we essentially have a distribution. So on September 5th or so, the peak water level ever recorded is that red line. The dark blue line in the middle is the median. So 50% of the time, the water surface elevation has been 214 feet above mean sea level. Now these other ones we can go statistically 90% or 10%, but what we see is in general that median line is what I want you to keep an eye on. In general, that we're staying around the guide curve in terms of elevation. The bottom figure shows this is actual elevation, this is the actual volume of the water, that brown curve. What we can see is for Jordan Lake, the Corps of Engineers is essentially keeping that water roughly around where the guide curve is. Okay, so that's fun, we get some kicks and giggles out of that. But what we can then do is start to say, well, Falls Lake we know has had some different challenges. So let's take a look over at Falls Lake. And there's Falls Lake. And things get a little bit more interesting. So Falls Lake is water supply for Raleigh, which has an enormous amount of water withdrawals from it. And what we start to see is that there are big periods where, combined with drought, we also get a lot of water withdrawals. And that bottom blue curve starts to become interesting because what it says is 50% of the time, we're about 2 to 3 feet below the guide curve, and 50% of the time we're at about 70% of the water storage. So the average condition at this reservoir is below what the operational target for this reservoir was set in the 1960s. All right, let's go to one that's actually in the news, or in kind of the nerdy hydrology news a lot. We'll go down to the Mobile District, and we'll look at Buford Dam, which stores water for Lake Lanier. And you're going to see a lot of red. So this is a water supply. There's been a lot of talk about reauthorization. This one gets really interesting because now this is the 90% line. 90% of the time, Lake Lanier is under the operational target. So it's nowhere even near the actual operational target. So we've done this for a series of different, let's see if I can get out of this, different reservoir or different districts. And so what I want to do is just kind of show what we can do when we turn some data analysts loose on it. We're going to use one type of curve, and then I'll show you the entire series of districts just to kind of show you the value of it. So you're going to have to bear with me to learn one statistical distribution curve. So percent exceedance is on the x-axis. The percent storage is on the y-axis. And what this means is that 80% of the time, or about 10% of the time, 10% of the time we're below 100% storage. Down here, about 5 to 10% of the time, we're above 100% storage. Okay, so essentially, all of this time, we're spending right at the guide curve. Okay, so the flatter that line is, that means the more time is being spent right on the guide curve, right? So if instead, so this is a really easy reservoir, Scott Carr Reservoir in the headwaters. We now go to Jordan Lake, which I showed you, and we're starting to get some variation. So we're starting to tilt the curve off the guide curve, which means that we're spending more of our time either above the guide curve or more of our time below the guide curve. So 10 to 20%, okay? So this gives us a way. Now we can start to look at other ones, and here's one of our problem reservoirs of Falls Lake. And we can see that now we're essentially spending only a little bit of our time exactly on the guide curve, and in fact, our 50% of the time we're below the guide curve. So we're starting to both pull the median away from it, and we're starting to tilt a lot of it. So we're spending a lot of time off of it, and we're systemically now off the guide curve. Make sense? So now what we can do is, if we can do this for every reservoir, we can divide it up by district, we can start to look at the entire United States. And what we can start to see is that there's systemic variation between districts, divisions, and types of dams. So down here we have the Wilmington District of the Corps of Engineers. This was Falls Lake that I showed you. New England is really interesting because the bulk of the dams in New England are flood control, so they don't provide water supply. So they go up, they essentially store water, but then otherwise they don't run a deficit. The Omaha District, I'm still trying to get my mind around. There are some that are very off the guide curve, but systemically they are below the guide curve a lot of the time. And then the Little Rock District, we started to notice that there are different ways that they're managing different reservoirs, and any dam that has hydroelectric associated with it sticks on the guide curve like rock. So what it says, it starts to indicate that there may be the ability to stay on the guide curve if you really want to, i.e. if somebody is financially encouraging you to do so. But if there's not the requirement to do so, that there's the flexibility to go off of it. So this raised a series of questions for us about whether the Corps is being adaptive or if they are being flexible. And there are important differences between this. And so we're using this as a first approximation of how could we get a look at, how could we capture visibly flexibility versus adaptation. If you go through the regulations that the Corps falls under, there's a lot of subtleties to it. There's engineering manuals, and then there's also the actual public laws. And their requirement for revisiting the guide curves differs depending on which one of those you're looking at. The requirement to revisit the guide curve every 10 years occurs in an engineering manual, not in the actual federal law. And so what we see is that we think that the Corps appears to interpret the planning requirement to basically go back and look at the documents, but not to actually go back and revisit the operations manual in response to the changing conditions. The vast majority that we've seen have said that it's been given a very low priority because they don't have the person power or the hours to do so. Just to close, this is my last slide. This is where we're at with the database. We've got about 40% of the reservoirs, about 60% of the Corps of Engineers volume done, 14 out of the 36 districts. We're now to the phase where we're having to scrape data via FOIA requests, which is slowing things down a whole lot. But we hope to, in about 6 to 8 months, have the whole database at least assembled, and then we'll go into the quality assurance stuff, and then we'll hopefully have it publicly available in about a year from now. Thanks.